أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. We might start closing the doors or in the at least have someone out there to invite people if they are looking for this place or just one door and let people in.
Okay.
Thank you. This workshop is on building self-esteem in children and adolescents. And this is an experiential workshop, which means that you will be working in as we go. Welcome all of you, brothers and sisters, especially our Sheikh, your name is? Our Ahmed Fayyaz, to bless our gathering. And I was expecting one more scholar, I think. And I'm Shamshad Zahir, and I'm a professional counselor. So I work as a counselor, and most of you probably know it already. Sister Madiha Mirza is also going to help facilitate this session. This is a very important topic for many reasons, and that's why we'll be covering from many aspects. But primarily, it's going to be the things that help promote self-esteem in our children from from the perspective of psychological health, you know, and emotional well-being. And we'll be also looking at other aspects that more broader and more deeper issues related to how Islam views this issue of raising our children. So in that connection, I'll be referring to Rana Ahmed Fayyaz and others. But this workshop has a very, you know, carefully designed structure, and we'll be following that. And during the course of discussion, you'll be, you know, working in on the issues. Yesterday we had a workshop here too. There was too much material, so there was too much rush. But fortunately, we are not too much rushed here. But the topic itself is so broad that I would encourage you to ask questions, to share your thoughts. But please limit it to the actual topic we are working on. All right? Please, loud salawat. To get a sense of what self-esteem means and what low self-esteem means, I would just request you all to just go over these questions, and if you want to respond to it, you can. You don't have to. Have you ever experienced feelings of inadequacy? Have you ever felt that people around you don't understand you? Have you ever felt low motivation? Have you ever felt you are less than others around you? For example, feeling down for being slow in math. You may be in a situation where others seem to be doing that job better than you, learning faster than you, you know, being smarter than you, and then nobody is telling you anything directly, perhaps, but you feel like you're left behind, you feel like you're not at par with the rest of the group. It is not a good feeling to have. I would like someone to shed some light. What we are talking about? What kind of feeling is that? Yes.
Feels like inferiority. Mm-hmm. Feeling not feeling strong.
Exactly. Any sister would want to comment? In your workplace, for example, you. Already a busy day, and a lot of work on your table, and all of that has to be done today. Already rushed and feel stressed, and then your employer comes and says, your boss comes and says, you know what, here's one document you have to prepare till this end of this day or noon, you know. And I mean, you just say, okay, sure, accept it, and now you're even more feeling even more stressed than before. So you have to take care of those tasks that you already had, and you had to complete them today. So you, and in the you know, this whole burden that you were carrying, you forget to do this thing which your employer gave you. You left it, so you attend to it as soon as you can, but the chance never came. And he had, sometime around the afternoon, he was leaving his the office, and he encountered you. Your bad luck. And he said, so, is that report ready? So, you were just about to try to figure out an answer. You say, I'm still working on it. Or, what? Do I pay you for this? You spend your day, you know, you can't meet your goals. We are here for a reason. We are not here for nothing. And in front of all this office and all these people around you. So, again, it's hard to come up with some sort of answer or reaction, so you just swallow it and you walk around and you meet somebody in the elevator. This is what the writer mentions in the book I was using. We'll go to that book. So in the elevator, another co-worker or colleague, you just out of your frustration, you start to just say, you know, speak your mind a little bit. You know what? This is crazy. So what happened? Yeah, you know what? The boss is just this. Jumped on me like this. So the reaction you get is, you know what, this place is serious business, man. You need to be on your toes all the time. You need to work harder. Don't put aside anything that's important, that's urgent. Do that first. So next time, just be careful, all right? Now, that on top of this response, help me understand what's going on in your mind. Anything?
No, actual things happen like this in the workplace where, you know, pressure and you have family and then you have work and it could be overwhelming sometimes.
So when the employer was, when the boss was, he jumped on you, how did you feel? Any thoughts? In front of all these employees and all the your co-workers and all that.
Little that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And embarrassed, you don't have such a high opinion of yourself anymore, at least at that point, you know?
In a shock, yes.
Yeah, so immediate, you are usually when we are confronted with a situation like this, not exactly this, I mean, someone who's equal to your status, you get upset, angry, irritated, so you can hit back or just say something, fight back, you know. But you can't do that here because it's your boss. So you hold it inside. So that you cannot, sometimes expressing anger, it makes something easy for the time being. But here you can't even do that. So the softer feeling inside is that of, which usually comes out in the form of anger. The feeling inside is of frustration, sadness, you know. You don't feel that good about yourself, feel like you've failed. But because of what happened to you, you're really frustrated and angry about it. Angry about the treatment you got. But the sadness is inside because, like, you know what, I couldn't do it. Like, what is going on with me? Like, what's wrong with me? Or something like that, you know? I just wanted to have a sense of what we are talking, what sort of feelings we are talking about. So, today, what is self-esteem? These are the things we work on briefly. What is self-esteem? Children with good self-esteem, what do they do? How our masumin talk to their children? Generally, it is, you know, and we'll benefit inshallah from our Alif. And so, talking to children, What are the skills we need to communicate to them and with them in a manner that helps build the self-esteem? If they are in a, for example, in a bad mental state, how you can help them rescue, hold their hand and, you know, pull them out of it. It's a process. And then their handout. This subject has been really interesting for me personally. I've been doing a workshop. We did a workshop in IEC Houston on this subject. Then we had an online course. Sister Madhya attended that course, and there were others from other cities. So let's start with Allahu Salawat. Self-esteem is how people feel about themselves. So it's high good self-esteem, bad self-esteem, high self-esteem, low self-esteem. How you feel about yourself. Children have special, they have more problems with self-esteem in a way because they don't have enough vocabulary to express it. If they feel a certain way, they don't know what is that, how to say it, you know. And if someone says something, they don't know how, is that right or wrong? Is that exactly how I feel? Or if they don't agree with it, how do they correct it? How to make sense of what they are feeling actually? They may not know what is happening to them. They may become impulsive or angry. Low self-esteem may cause depression. The big issue of teenage depression in the United States has its roots in low self-esteem at an earlier age. In how they get their parenting, how, you know, they are treated in school, the issues of peer pressure and other things. All of that comes together, piles up, and then the child doesn't feel good about himself anymore. And this sadness inside leads to depression, clinical depression. And then further into, you have suicide, you have drugs, and you have other issues. Children with good self-esteem, they act independently. You know, like if they pick up a task and you leave them, they'll do it. This is a sign of self-esteem. They think good about it. They have confidence in themselves, in other words. They know that, like, if they have a poster project, they pick up and they say, okay, I'll do it. If they need any help, they'll ask for it, but they can do it themselves. It's not like, no, wait, sit down with me, you know, don't have me. At the moment you move aside, they can't continue for a minute. This shows that they don't have enough confidence in themselves. Or maybe the task is not at their own age, you know. If an age-appropriate task is given to a child, he can deal with it independently. Children with good self-esteem, they take responsibility for their actions. When they make a mistake, you know, they say, oh yeah, I did it, sorry, or, you know, I won't do it again, or I'm trying to learn, you know, let me think, yeah, I think I did it, you know. They take responsibility for it. They manage conflicts appropriately. Conflict is part of life, but using violence or right and other means is inappropriate way of managing conflicts. They are able to tolerate frustration. To say that, you know, we never get frustrated is unreal. Everybody gets frustrated sometimes. But how you tolerate frustration, you know. Now frustration is a strong word. It could be lesser, something less than that. But then being able to tolerate that confusion, ambiguity, or anger, or whatever it is, you know, being able to tolerate it, to see, okay, let me figure out what's going on. Let us find a way. You know, it's... Welcome, Maulana Hanif. He's from Chicago. And so, handle peer pressure appropriately. Children with good self-esteem, they handle peer pressure appropriately. What is peer pressure? It's a vast topic. We had a whole workshop on peer pressure a few years ago. And generally, they say, like, peer pressure means like people are pressuring you to do something. Like, if you're a high school student, other students want you to do something. They ask you to come with us or do this or use drugs or, you know, engage in some activity with them, like asking you, pushing you, forcing you or something. That may be the case sometimes. But generally peer pressure, in more accurate terms, based on the journal articles and other things that I've read, is that peer pressure is this a psychological state of a person who is feeling pressured. It's not the pressure itself. It's this inner state of a child who feels pressured. And he feels that, you know, like he wants to or she wants to be accepted in the crowd. So feels pressured inside. It's a sort of a vulnerable state. Psychologically, a person is like easily influenced, is running into this confusion of this way or that. You know, crowd is behaving a certain way. Should I join them to be accepted, or follow some other ways which probably my parents or the law or religion or whatever else asking me to do? Correct? And that depends on, again, self-esteem issues. If a child is psychologically stable and doesn't have this kind of vulnerability or weakness, then will not feel pressured. So one person may feel more peer pressure than another in this thing, if you define it this way. Two children in the same situation, two children, two Muslim Shia children in the same classroom, same situation, will not feel equal peer pressure. Because one may have gotten certain upbringing, another might have been through a different family culture. So, difference in peer pressure. So, it depends. So, this is probably a better way to define it. Children with good self-esteem take on new challenges. They're not afraid, they don't shy away, they're not scared. I don't want to mention this as like comparing children or one is weaker than others. No, people have different personality styles, and people have different personality types are different and all of that. And if, for example, a child is more introspective, more reflective kind of a child, that's good too. But like, by not willing to accept a challenge generally, you know, on a continuum, let's say from 0 to 100, I mean generally, you know, a certain average amount of challenges children would accept generally, right? Not everyone would stand up to speak in a crowd. Not everyone would want to take up a big project. But a lot of things children generally would like to do, and they accept that challenge. But not having a good opinion, good feeling about oneself, holds a person back from accepting a challenge. Children with good self-esteem express their emotions appropriately. So if they are sad, they can look sad and they can feel sad and they can say that I'm sad, and if there really is something to be sad about, they can cry and it's okay for them because you know they are sad. They are just genuine about their mood. But if they're not feeling good about themselves, that sadness comes out in a different way. They suddenly become, you know, very harsh, very defensive about something, screaming and yelling, and because they don't know what's happening to them, because they are not accepting themselves. So being sad or someone who is crying, this is not a problem. The problem is how the emotions are being expressed. So if the person expressing the emotions or her emotions, that's one thing. But then hitting another person or being aggressive or blaming another person or such behaviors, that is an inappropriate way of expressing emotions. So first of all, any thoughts about this? I've spoken a lot. So this is what I wanted to go over, what self-esteem is, and you know, we can find some examples and stuff like that. Any thoughts on this? Examples you come across as a parent, as a teacher? Yes, please.
A month back, we had gone to a camp in Chicago, and I noticed something between my son, and he made a new friend, and they were bolting. That was his first time bolting. And they both the children, they are 10 and 11. The 10 and 11. And
you mean boating like a boat?
Yeah,
a
boat.
Water.
There is a camp.
Lake or something. Oh.
Yeah. So we went there and they went on a paddle boat, they went on a normal boat, and then they went on a canoe. The canoe was a little bit harder. I could see the difference between the two boys. One was, both had to paddle it perfectly so that they could come back to the coastline. They couldn't. They tried three times and I could see them. They are trying to come back, but they are unable to turn the canoe and then come back. So I could see them. And thanks God, the lifeguards over there, they went and they helped and the children came back. But I could see my son, he was happy, he was enjoying. And he said, oh, it was so much fun. And I could see the other boy, he was tense. He was absolutely, he couldn't even walk when he got down. That was the first time when I could see two children about the same age.
Engaged in the same activity.
Yeah, same, everything same. Yeah. And how differently they both reacted. So thank you. One could really see these things.
Yeah, yes. Okay. So, my own example. So, feel free. Right now I have this conversation with you. And alhamdulillah, Allah given this much confidence I can speak to you. There was a time if I was stand in front of five people, I would be all sweating and my color of my face would be blushed or red, or I could forget what I was going to talk about. So, but then putting myself in those situations, gradually learn to cope with it. Initially I learned that, it's inside of me. People don't know what's going on inside of me. So I said, I can deal with my inside and do the job, do what I have to do. And gradually I became more, comfortable with it. But it wasn't it wasn't easy job, easy route, easy journey to be able to. So sometimes it came as copying another good speaker. I'm talking about 30 years ago, 20 years ago. That copying and I was trying to copy guys. They were like, oh, wow, debater, look at him, the crowd cheering, all this and that in college, And then, then I would also go and when I go there, I'm not like him. So, and then not doing such a good job, coming down, feeling bad about myself, but it was an irrational decision because I wasn't knowing myself so well. What are my limitations? What is my right position to be in? Should I accept it? Should I not? One side of me is telling me you can't do it. The other side is, I have to do it. I must do it. Jump into the situation. So these are all unrealistic, thoughts about oneself and how you view yourself. If you don't know yourself, that's another issue. So you have to be accepted by the people around you so that you can accept yourself. And this is a struggle we all are facing. If we can have a better sense of what our experiences are, then we can empathize with our kids better, know what struggles they are going through, so we really can help them. Yes?
A couple of questions. The first one is the self-esteem, is it a reversible process, being low self-esteem? Maybe different ages are, is the damage already done, after a while, or no, we can.
Yes, definitely it is reversible, definitely, in most cases. Now, if it has already led to depression, then the depression has to be treated. It becomes a clinical problem, it becomes a problem, through whatever means, has to be dealt. Now, it's more severe than just a simple self-esteem issue. But self-esteem is an issue that is reversible because it's, for example, the child is either grieving something, right, feeling like is failed in some feelings of inadequacy about oneself, or feeling not understood, or whatever it is, such feelings are there. And if if people around that child, somebody in that environment understands the child, he won't be left alone. Because what low self-esteem leads to is loneliness. And that's what depression is about, feeling alone, isolated. So if you can let him, understand, know that he's not alone, and that people around him know what he's going through, then the loneliness, he doesn't encounter that kind of lonely feeling and isolation, and you can prevent depression. Yes.
Yeah, one more comment. I think also, I mean, the general concept of, putting, taking a task appropriate, I mean, age appropriate task and looking around and trying to compare, I think this is kind of a misleading a little bit, because every child is different, and some kids are good at things, better at certain tasks, versus other tasks. Some kids are very good in math, mm-hmm. and not good in memorization. Some kids are very good in memorization and not good at math. So, you could put two of them together. One guy excels in math, and I think it's misleading a little bit. If we
elusive. What is appropriate for a child? This concept is confusing, right? What you're saying is that you don't know what's appropriate for this child.
You have to know the kid, I think.
Maybe the parent is a perfectionist person. You should always be getting A. How did you get a B? And this is this demand from the child, And it's your problem, it's not the child's problem. It's my problem as a parent that I cannot deal with this thing that my child has a B. It's my problem. It's not a child's problem. But then you're trying to make it a child's problem because putting unrealistic demands, and in other terms, putting conditions of worth, that you are worthy if you are this, or I love you if you have an A. That is a kind of a big condition of love. When you give conditional love to a child, or a wife or a husband gives conditional love, or similarly to other social situations. Imagine a person is putting conditions. Like the example I gave yesterday, saying if you marry that Wahhabi girl, I kick you out. So that's, I'm saying that putting conditions for loving your child, that becomes a huge issue. So there has to be a way to work around something that you don't like. Because first and foremost, it's your problem, not the child's problem. Any other thoughts?
So depending on what community you belong to, for example, we all work in our offices, hospitals, and whatnot, right? And we interact with other parents who are not like us, right? And sometimes they do bring their children. And outside of work also we interact with their children, and we see the difference between our children and their children. However, they were all born equally, right? We see that certain children have more self-confidence because they belong to a certain background. And let's say in the case of Indian, Chinese, Pakistani people, Iranian families, their children are very, very good in education. Parents of the other side are always struggling with, my kid is always getting a B, he's very good in sports, they are very good, they have self-confidence, leadership qualities, and they're probably more successful later on because of their leadership qualities. However, they're weak in education, academics, and stuff. My question is self-confidence like an innate property of a person, or is it something that you can hone and you can train yourself? And on the other side, education is a good example. It's not a built-in quality that you will be an educated person or inclined toward good education, right? This is something that you can train on, right? So, are we missing a point by saying, every child is different? Some children have this innate quality of being a leader versus some other.
A part of that is genetic, I think, inherited qualities. Some children are very outgoing, social. They're always wanting to be with people. Some children are more, they're more comfortable when they don't have to deal with all these people all the time. because they're more, you know, I know these terms in psychology, I don't want to use them, but they just to convey a meaning, like, you know, introvert kind of thing, that thinks a lot before doing something, has already thought out, planned out something in his mind. Such people are good planners, they're really, you know, they're good planners, they have skills, they speak, they really makes a lot of sense. There are others who think while, they think loudly. You know, they're thinking, and you might think that, oh, so that's a plan, and you are judging them on what plan they are talking about. Actually, they are right now in the process of thinking. They haven't thought about this at all. This is their first time, and you are the first person who is listening to this new thought in their mind. And so if you take them before they are saying, you know, you can be misled about what to make of what they are, you know, but you know, that is there, but it's a learned attitude and a skill that people, you know, children can be trained. It's, you know, just I don't want to keep going on and on, but if a child has lost someone, a dear one in his family or her family, they say in books of related to the loss and grief, you know, grief work, that generally if a child has lost someone, he has this you know, a smaller community around him, like parents and friends and these people, right? Immediate ones are the parents, siblings. These are the, you know, primary community, as they call it technically. If the primary community loses contact with this person, this orphan child, let's say, there's no one to understand this child. So it's grieving inside, and it's showing in behavior, anger, you know, disruptive behavior, all of that. And people are thinking, oh, what sort of behavior is that? And punishing the child, or for example, not helping, not understanding what the child is going through, then this is called disruption of the primary community. When that happens, the connection of a person with the larger community is broken forever. Cannot build relations with people outside anymore. Since the person doesn't feel safe, doesn't feel secure, will always have a problem in relationships with people. Will not accept someone who shows emotions, will not be able to express emotions to other people. If someone does, it'll be very mistrustful of the other person, right? If he or she expresses emotion to someone, will not trust himself, will not trust the person, whether he will live up to this relationship or not. Will always be a problem, because the disruption happened and was never fixed. So that's one example of how social connections are broken because of something much deeper, leading to another thing, to another thing. If I ask you examples, you know, the child is saying, now we are working on recognizing the fear, how to deal with the self-esteem issues of children. The first thing that's within your mind is to recognize the feeling. Your child comes and says, I wanted to punch Imran on his nose. What feeling is that? Okay. Just because of rain, teacher cancels the field trip. You know? Hang on.
Disappointment.
Okay. Jerry invited me to see his dog, but...
Not sure.
Limitation.
Yeah, feeling limited, but... Confusion, right?
Fear.
Fear, yeah. So it's your job to figure out, you know, what probably, maybe more dots should maybe no. needed to join. Sorry?
No.
Doubt? No. Yes. I don't know why teachers give all this homework for the weekend. Or maybe another way. I don't know why teachers give all this homework for the weekend.
Frustration.
Stress. Feeling stress, yeah. My best friend Sarah is moving to another city. They are going to be away from each other. Yeah. Los Angeles. Loneliness, exactly. Inshallah. Learn skills of empathic listening. Sister Nadia. not one. Yes, please. You can stand up and you can lead this little handout. You have the handout, handout one? Okay. Building self-esteem and children.
It's the second handout.
What one?
It's page four.
You don't have one.
You don't? Did you make copies of handout one or? It's in the
page four. Page four.
Did you find it?
Bye-bye.
It has an excerpt in the beginning.
Well, it's on page 4 of this packet.
It is?
It's on page 4. Staple it.
Oh, this, the order is not right. Just go to page 4 in your handout. Yes, please. Be a little loud, please. Thank you.
I was a wonderful parent before I had children. I was an expert on why everyone else
was. I was a wonderful parent before I had children.
I was an expert on why everyone else was having problems with their children. Then I had three of my own. Living with real children can be humbling. Every morning I would tell myself, today is going to be different. And every morning was a variation of one before. You gave her more than me. That's the pink cup, I want the blue cup. This oatmeal looks like throw-up. He punched me. I never touched him. I won't go to my room. You are the boss over me. The child is saying, that TV show was boring. Me. No, it wasn't. It was interesting. Child. It was stupid. Me. It was educational. Child. It stunk. Me. Don't talk that way.
Where is this argument going?
Nowhere.
What is typical?
Just close the TV.
Yeah.
We're escalating.
Okay, now, so what the parent is doing is denying the feeling of the child. The TV show was boring. So, no, it wasn't. It was very interesting. Mm-hmm. It was stupid. It was educational. Okay, now can you fill now these blanks? Yes, please. Yeah. Read the what the child says and then ask about the...
Denying the feeling. I don't like the new baby. Now you can fill out what exactly should be the response.
You tell us the response. Yeah. The child says, I don't like the new baby. You're the parent.
What should the parents say?
Deny the feeling first.
Deny the feeling.
Okay, we have to deny the feeling. Yeah,
deny the
feeling. Oh, that's easy. Yeah, maybe your child has been asking for a sibling. If I had another baby brother is born,
then I don't like it.
I say, I don't like this new baby.
The baby is
good. Sorry? Can you phrase now, you have another denying the feeling example?
Probably you could say, the baby is God's gift.
Give gift to us. Don't call it a bad word, you know, don't say that or something.
Sorry. I think defining the feeling would be very important. I understand, can you help me understand, why do you think the baby is not? Why you don't like the baby?
Okay. So you try to, first, the child said, I don't like the new baby.
I could understand the feeling that what the kid is going through.
Uh-huh. So what's the feeling of this child right now?
Jealousy alone.
Could be jealousy.
Lack of attention.
But sorry?
Lack of attention.
Lack of attention that is leading to jealousy, right? Mm-hmm. Something even under this jealousy that's leading to this. So feeling, abandoned. Feeling of abandonment.
Sharing.
Not being attended to, right?
Insecurity, probably.
Feeling insecure. Yes, mashallah. So recognizing it is the main project. If you can understand what this, you're dealing with the feeling of the child who's saying that I don't like the new baby. So if you can do that, then you have to figure out a way to express, like reflect this feeling back to the child. When the child is saying, I don't like the new baby. So you say, you don't feel happy about, you know, your brother right now. So you haven't said it's good or it's bad, rather you just help you're making him understand that you understand where he's coming from, what he's feeling, you know. But generally we discount it and say, you're wrong, how can you say that, you know, but you're saying, so you're feeling upset, or you're feeling, even when you say if you're feeling really frustrated or angry, if, depending on how the child puts it, it's just giving words to the child, so that he can learn to express his emotion. Yes.
I had a dumb birthday party after you went all out to make it a wonderful day.
So just imagine you had a whole day cooking, cleaning, buying gifts, wrapping them up, and entertaining all these guests, and then all the mess in the house, and all of that, and your child is like, right after the guests are gone, I'm bored, I didn't enjoy this party. I mean, imagine that feels. Now, how do you deny the feeling first? Sisters? Anyone?
You deserve it.
You deserve any more birthday party. This is it. This is the last one you ever see. Okay.
You don't appreciate what you have done for
you. Exactly. So what would be the good way of, like, how would you accept the feeling?
So can you help me understand why do you feel that way?
I mean, one, it's better than denying it, but there's one issue here. When you ask a why question, then you're bringing this child out of that feeling mode to a cognitive mode. So you're trying to rationalize it, rather than attend to that feeling, that frustration, anger, grief, whatever it is. Whenever you ask a why question, you know, then it's like, you have to think to answer, right? Mm. Think to answer. Oh, so it either gets frustrated, why are you asking me why? What do you know? You know now? Or doesn't express that feeling and expresses it somewhere else. Mm. So express it lower. So what is the feeling, first of all, of this child?
Bored.
I had a dumb birthday. Sorry.
Bored. The child was
maybe
unhappy at the
disappointed.
Party.
Maybe. Disappointed,
unhappy, basically.
Unhappy, yeah. So there's something about that birthday he was expecting that didn't happen. Now a lot of good things happened. There was something about that birthday, and you don't know what that is. Maybe somebody said something to this child over there. One of his friends. They were like friends were playing amongst each other. He didn't get the attention he was looking for, right? Maybe he doesn't have the social skills or whatever the issue is. But he didn't get out of it all that he expected. And that something that was lacking meant a lot to this child, right? And for us, it may not mean much. So that's, well, we are good at denying feelings and things like that. But I think a lot of us know how to, you know, accept feelings also. How will you do that? So, you know, it's a lot of disappointment, you know. Or you feel disappointed. Any other thoughts?
So we are acknowledging the feeling. Is that what mm-hmm. we're doing?
Mm-hmm. Acknowledging the feeling. Like you feel.
So I see that you're unhappy.
You're unhappy, exactly. Exactly. You see how, I mean, like, in the business I do, I mean, I come across a lot. When someone expressing a feeling is going to, you can see from the face, this person is very agitated, either upset or frustrated or very sad, but he's putting up this face, funny face, laughing about something, somebody who died. Laughing while saying that, oh, you know, one more friend died, you know. I mean, come on. So if you get help, this person, you know, come to terms with his own feelings, it can be, it's a healing process. It heals. To heal, you feel pain. Like if for example, you have a physical pain, you either take a medication or a shot, there's some sort of discomfort or pain involved. But then you pass through that and then it starts to heal. So that first painful thing is there. Now it's always not always painful, but there's a little bit of struggle, internal struggle that the child has to go through to understand what is happening.
basically what you're saying is that first attempt that we should take is that you should show, demonstrate empathy toward that child. I mean, just like recognize what they are going through, that, you know, there's no disconnect. Whatever you're feeling as a guardian, I'm understanding what
you're saying. No disconnect. Excellent. That's exactly what we mean. Because it's this connection that children feel connected, then everything is okay. But this disconnection, this disruption of this contact with the people around this child, that, you know, that's very destructive. And the children, they grow up building connections. Our happiness is in making connections with people. At whatever age we are, as humans, we thrive on, you know, how good our connections are, our relationships are, our friendships are, you know, with our co-workers, with our family, with all these other things. And anytime something goes wrong with our connection, the people will be upset. You know? Children are crying not because they didn't get that thing they were asking for. They're crying because somebody, one of their friends, walked away, or didn't attend to them, or didn't play with them, you know, or they couldn't find a friend to play with. That's what, you know, causes discomfort. Yes, please, let's work on this.
I'm so mad. Just because I was 2 minutes late for gym, the teacher kicked me out.
What
page is
that? Oh, yeah. What feeling is that? Anger, exactly. So the parent would deny the feeling by... So we all know now what it means.
You broke the rule, that's why.
Yeah, you must have done something wrong. You must have been late, or you're lazy. You're back, you're one more of the same thing, you know? So...
Accepting the feeling. Child, my turtle has died. He was alive till this morning. Here, this is so sad. I'm sorry too. Child, he was my friend. Parent, yeah, it is terribly hard to lose a friend. Child, I had taught him some special things. Parents, you used to have fun playing together. Parent, you really loved that turtle. Child, yeah, I used to feed him every day.
Yeah, one of the patients I'm talking to, she's working in Walmart in the area, warehouse area, picking boxes and all of that. Mother of 3 children and working full time, so all day and picking up boxes and storing them, stacking them, and then working on this machine. What do you call this? Gifter, forklifter. And husband is out of job, and then has anxiety, and then chronic pain, and all of this stuff going on. So, and laughing, and at the same time, and it just add up all these things, right? So, I said, how do you see yourself as a lady working in a warehouse in this kind of job? This kind of took a few seconds to figure out what it was about, you know? And she was in tears immediately. Immediately she was in tears that, I mean, this is not a kind of job I can do. I have back pain, I'm a woman, I have kids to take care of. How much can I do? And then paying the bills and all of this stuff. In this society, unfortunately, that created a society where, you know, men and women all are being dragged into workplaces and forced to work, and often working in jobs that they cannot, you know, they cannot handle. And pressuring them, more demands, asking 2 people to work as 4, one person to do a job of 2 people or 3 people, and then all of this is causing, you know, a lot of ruin, a lot of loss for people. Here we are just like same thing, you know, if you can help heal people, your own children, people around you by being good listeners. This always is a skill which comes very handy and very effective. Yes.
So, I mean, I have one of my children made to say, I hate math. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I always have a hard time with that. You know? We practice so much, we do, but it never, you know, that complaint is always there. They get good grades in the end. But I know that there is this issue. So, I mean.
Children in a classroom, especially if they're not enjoying the subject, they're falling behind, and the parents, and of course, I mean, they have to pass their grade, and then we give this message, you know, math is very important, you know, you have to score, because it's a scoring subject. I don't know if it's scoring or not, but some people say that. So then you have to do good in math, and it's your future. So it's both this demands of being perfect, but also low feelings of low self-esteem coming along with it. So we have to just, it is our problem as parents. We have a hard time dealing with our feelings. Right now, like in this discussion, we are dealing with the child's feelings. But a lot of this is about our own feelings. So we don't bring our feelings in between. If a child is coming saying, I don't like math, so you keep your feelings to yourself, try to understand the feelings of this child. So math is not a subject you enjoy. That's the fact. Children don't like to hear the same words back to them, you know. So you change the words to them so that they know that you understood them. You know. Don't say, I don't like math, so you don't like math. Not going to say it. Why are you saying it back to me? They don't like it. But if you put better, you know, more expressive language. The children have limited vocabulary. But using your own knowledge of words and feelings, you can express it. Listen with full attention. Acknowledge their feelings with a word. Oh, I see. A lot of work is done just by listening, and you help them, you know. Like this book I was using. This child comes and says, oh, this Michael or whoever, you know, threw my math book on the ground. So you say, you didn't like it. You're obviously angry about it. And he started, so instead of saying, what happened? Why? Or like some people, some parents get over emotional and say, this is wrong. Who is Michael? Where does he live? What does he do? Why did you do that to me? Now the child, instead of dealing with his own problem, is trying to deal with this parent who is getting even more annoyed than he is. So that becomes a second, another problem. So then the child will think next time, I won't even bring my stuff to my dad because it just gets even more emotional about my problem than I would be. So just saying that you understand what happened. Oh, this is not a good experience. You didn't have a good day. Your book is dirty now. You were not expecting this thing. So the child will, the actual dialogue that happened, the parent said, I just kept saying, I see, oh really? That's bad, all of that. And the child first, she was blaming Michael. Then it came to, for example, he also acknowledged that I actually, you know what, I broke his glass something, little toy he brought to school. I broke it, not intentionally perhaps, but being just a little bit careless, broke that glass thing. And then he said that, you know what, with a little bit of carelessness on my part, but then on the other hand, he thought I deliberately, or I was just, he was just angry about it, so he did that. And then he said, you know what, maybe I could tell him later that I didn't deliberately do it. On the other side, you know, Michael shouldn't have thrown my book either. So he was able to balance these things himself. And he did the job himself. The parent didn't have to worry about fixing that problem for the child. Because we have to just be good listeners and let the child do the work. Because tomorrow, the children have to grow up learning to become independent and take care of their problems. Others will not solve their problems for them.
Basically, it looks like from your talk so far, it looks like children's problems that they bring to you are not really problems. They just want you to act as an outlet for their emotions and all of the stuff that's going on in their mind. They just want you to act as a receiver of all that information, and they really don't have, these are not really big issues, you're saying. I don't like math. Okay, fine. It's just for your information only kind of a thing, but this is something that they need help with.
They want to see if they're accepted or not. If they are accepted, then they are more accepting of themselves. Most of the time when a person, grown-up person even, you know, has a problem, you know, feelings of inadequacy or other things, because he's not accepting himself as he is. He was made like this. This is what his face is, this is what his personality is, this is what he's good at. Or this is not his limitations. And it's him or it's her, it's okay. But no, it doesn't look, see it that way, because others never accepted him as well. Always wanted him to do better. Always wanted him to, or her, to do good in math, good in art, good in music, good in whatever, you know? Yes.
Where as a parent do we bring in the guidance part? And like, for example, if my child brings an issue to me that, okay, I got in a fight, or this happened, well, we don't want to criticize or, like you said, you know, attack the other child or his family or their values, but where do we listen when he's done? Do we provide that guidance that maybe they're looking for, and then we want them to come for us at that time, or do we just pause that conversation and then at a better time,
and then
we'll bring the topic back? Because I mean,
yeah, so next stage after, yes, after, for example, having this basic skill of being a good listener, the second stage comes engaging cooperation. Now you're seeking them to cooperate with you, with their classmates, with the teacher, with others, and you know, you have to, first of all, then they describe the problem, what it is, you know, and explain, give a solution to the child, you know. And then, for example, and way that, instead of lecturing the child, state the problem, state it, you know. But then what actually happens, you describe the problem. Your the dinner table is a mess. Or, for example, the dishes are all still lying there, you know. This, you are describing the problem. The clothes are untidy, or your wardrobe doesn't look clean, or the bathroom is not clean. So you are describing the problem, and let the child figure out and ask. Or something has happened outside. The salat is getting qaza, or for example, the Quran is not being practiced, has not been practiced in this house. So try as less to use the blame part and more for the actual problem, describe the problem, and then the discipline part is all, you know. After the first discussion about this thing, it's an online course actually. So we work on engaging cooperation, then disciplining, you know, discipline, what is the right way of discipline, and then praise and other topics come up. But I mean, the first thing we all need is to work on empathy, and not to say that, for example, we don't deal with the actual problem. The actual problem, we have to deal with that problem. But we jump too fast to try to fix the problem. One problem here is the child's own troubles within himself. That has to be taken into account first. Then the problem has to be first of all understood, and some sort of guidelines have to be established, right? And if, for example, this child is constantly having conflicts with other children or teacher or something, he has to learn to resolve these conflicts at home. Learn to resolve differences at home before he can resolve differences outside. You cannot say, okay, I'll go to your school and fix this problem for you. Well, maybe once or twice. You can always fix it all the time. So, I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, like, if we go to this this example, like in here, like the birthday party. Right? If I spent my whole day preparing something for my child, and they said something like that, my immediate response would be, how ungrateful of you, which is not a good response. Like you said, first I'd see what happened. Maybe he didn't live up to his standard, or he had something else in mind, or maybe he got in a fight with a friend, or one of those presents broke. We determine what happened, but where is the parent? I don't want to let that opportunity go to tell him that ungratefulness is unacceptable. Why do I bring in the lesson of, okay, I understand this happened, and you didn't like that your toy broke, or you didn't get what you wanted, or one of your best friends didn't show up, but that behavior of being ungrateful, that remark is unacceptable.
Yes.
I'm his mom, but I wouldn't want
to. That's unacceptable either, and that all the hard work you did, and on this fact that the child seems like doesn't care about that all the work that others around him are doing for the child.
What his statement
so now, if I ask you, basically, how would you express as a parent your dissatisfaction at this child's comment? Yeah.
I think they have to deal with identifying a problem, things like that. Maybe not even that time, maybe tomorrow, the next day, in a non-confrontational place. Just talk about, use an I statement, like you were mentioning yesterday. And just say, hey, I felt frustrated yesterday when you said that. I do understand why, but I think sometimes in the heat of the moment, it's too difficult. To
yes, maybe after a few exchanges, then the child knows that, okay, you get his point, and then you say, you know what, this thing wasn't up to your expectations, but don't you think like I worked very hard and I did a lot for you, and that you know that you also need to give me some credit for what I did, or like thank me at least. So then the child will accept this, you know, it's getting too far, yeah?
That's not the issue. We are talking about feeling of a child. Mm-hmm. What we are just saying, and Sister mentioned, you are saying, it's me that I am arranging a party, so I also looking for appreciation.
Uh-huh. Right. It becomes my problem. No, then. Yeah, it's not the child.
Sometimes we talk over.
That's the way I'm seeing it. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing that what I did, I need also appreciation. No longer then you did a good job.
I'm not focusing on my appreciation. Yeah, well, I want him to learn that it's not appealing characteristics to be grateful individually. I mean, regardless of how I feel.
Yeah, it hurt me when you said that.
No, no, I don't want him to worry about what I'm doing. I'm saying that being ungrateful is not a good characteristic. And to have, period. That child should learn to be grateful and thankful as an individual.
Yeah, so is it like a denying
that's
the feeling? Is it denying the feeling?
Of the child or whose feeling?
No, like if a mother or parent is saying to a child that, you know, that's being like ungrateful. So is that like denying of feeling?
That would be. Initially it would be. If we give that kind of response, then we're ignoring the child's feeling. Because first of all, we're trying to read his mind, that he's trying to be ungrateful to me. He's trying to ignore me. He's trying to offend me. This is what, but we don't know what he's up to. What's in his mind? What's happened? Something might have happened you're not seeing.
So you are saying that instead of saying that you are being ungrateful, that we should ask him and that we should explain him that what we have been through, what we our mother has done for him, and then he should realize it by himself what we have been through, so he can be grateful.
Yeah, but the interesting part is you don't even have to. Most of the time, you don't even have to do that, because you know what? After you acknowledge the child's feeling, often children understand that. Yeah, mom, that it was bad, but thanks anyway for the party. You know, they often say that because they do acknowledge it, but it's hard for them to say it because of the dissatisfaction, because of that they didn't feel satisfied. So if they bring up their negative issues first, positive emotions are easy to deal with. You know, if I say, brother, sister, thank you for attending this workshop, you'll say, you're welcome. But if I say, I feel heartbroken, you didn't show up. That's where you have a problem dealing with my negative emotion, right? So, negative emotions of children are harder to, that's why we are learning about it. You had a point?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that the brilliance of approaching the situation with children, with patience, is that once you actually identify that it wasn't that they're ungrateful for the party, they didn't think that you put effort, but maybe something else happened, then in their mind, they're registering that it wasn't the party that was bad, it was that small situation. Mm-hmm. So maybe the next time something like that happens, they don't say the party was bad. They realize it was that small part of it, and they say that interaction was.
Exactly. So after the first exchange, when you say, you know, so you don't feel satisfied, you're not feeling very happy about this party, they will say, what exactly happened? Their next response would be, my friend said this to me, or somebody broke my whatever toy, you know, or I didn't get the toy I was looking for. I wanted something, and nobody gave me that gift, you know. So whatever it did, it come out, and then gradually he's trying to balance it in his mind. Okay, so birthday party wasn't bad. This part was really not up to my expectation. Then you say, you know what? Then the child will say, but then you know what? When we were playing around those chairs, I really had fun. This child will come to balance things, you know. Like it's like you are having complaints about your teacher before, you say, he didn't teach us the subject well. Then you remember, oh yeah, you know what? We had so much fun with that teacher when he arranged that whatever filter. You know? So the same person, you have first a very black and white opinion of the person, and next you try to balance and you say, you know what, it's not that bad. There are some good sides of it, some bad sides of it. So yeah.
I think what problem we are discussing is without scope of age of a child. First, we have to see that what is the age of a child, what is the event. Based on the child, based on the event, we can answer it and we can do analysis. And each case will be different. For example, if a child had a birthday party problem, so we can talk to him or her very lightly and bring a part of the child, try to give comfort, as he said that there will be fight between that. But if you see some other example, some kids are grown up and it's not applied to birthday party, but there's some other thing and they're stubborn. My friend has a car. I have a second-hand car, not buying a brand new car. So the thing is, this child has to understand the problem of parents. That's the, because of other responsibilities, they cannot buy a car. Here you can explain it. So it's, I think it's more like a scope of a child and the scope of the problem.
Yeah. In your example, give them their wishes and fantasy. Oh, it would be so much fun. If I get $100,000, we'll buy the Jaguar we always wanted, and we'll go for a long ride. Nobody bought a Jaguar. Nobody even looked at a Jaguar. But you gave the child in fantasy what you couldn't give in reality. Right? So the issue is settled still. So because explaining the monthly budget to a five-year-old is not possible.
Right.
So you cannot explain, for example, you know, like you know what? We'll need to save money for like 5 years or maybe 50 years to buy that actual what you are looking for. So we can't reason this way with the child. Especially the younger children, they need children with more complex issues. Frankly discussing this, children even younger than this age, like 3-4 year old, you know, children, sometimes they need help with a play therapist or something because nobody can help. Parents cannot help sometimes, counselors cannot help, child psychologists cannot help. They just need a play therapist. Because they don't have the words to say it, or they don't know how to, or they're feeling very, very... There's too much emotion in their way to say anything to a human being. So they were put in a situation where they're just playing with toys and they're building a sort of house in their own imagination. An environment that they're living in and they put it on the board or they, you know, express it in some form of physical activity, or they're just having this talk with themselves. You know, the two dolls playing among them, one saying this. You can, these trained therapists can figure out what's happening to this child and come to terms with it, a few sessions that work. So keep that in mind. We are not training ourselves to be perfect therapists. We are just saying some basic skills to figure out, you know, some basically, you know, where it's coming from. And if you see anything more than this, then you go to a professional. Yeah.
I don't know if the next question is about that, the complex issue. If my question is out of context, you can stop or you can write to not to answer. The thing is, most of us see that they are overconfident. Their issue is not to have a good clothes in the United States. Their own issue is to have a good bedroom or having a car. That, since they have it because of the society we live in, we can afford it, that forced them to be overconfident. And they start challenging themselves, including parents. So the overconfidence, how you describe overconfidence? You mentioned that they are...
You know, like you're, right now, like you're trying to analyze the situation.
Right.
Now, either find a psychological basis of it or having a sociological, you know, study of the situation. As a grown-up, we are trying to make sense of it using our knowledge base, depending on if we are trained in this, we have a study of sociology, psychology, any of these things, all of that put aside. That's what we are trying to analyze it. But what we have to do right now is we don't need to do any of this analysis. Right now we need to do is, for example, the child is feeling really troubled. And you have to see, is this something that can be handled at home or not? If it's something that can be handled at home, this is how we go about it. First, know what the feeling is and try to learn to express it to the child. Learn to building self-esteem of the child by accepting the child. His worst feelings have to be accepted before he can deal with anything more than that. The worst feeling is like, well, now a child, I don't want to repeat the words I hear all the time from kids, you know, just very embarrassing, but, you know, I have to train myself to understand what they're actually saying. So they can say all those nasty things for 40 minutes and then not get hurt. Nobody beats them up. Nobody scolds them. Nobody says, "You are, what kind of a person are you? Is that something to say about that girl, about that boy, about that teacher, about your parents?" No, they feel accepted. They never had a chance to express. Never had, I'm not saying all two kids, a lot of kids, they never had anyone who can speak to. Especially in our, I don't know which culture we really belong here. Many of us have come from outside, right? So, but in our back home culture, the grown-ups run the show, everything. Any discussion, any, you know, dawat, any dinner, any social occasion is handled and run by the grown-ups. The kids have really no place over there. They go in the corner, hide, you know, play something, do something. They don't matter, they don't matter. Nobody cares what they say, why they say, what they do. And whenever there's a fight, somebody goes and says, "Why did you fight? You broke this, you shouldn't do that, be a good kid. Come on, go about your business, no more noise, okay?" I mean, they're human beings, they have some feelings, but you don't, we don't take these things into account. That's why frustration grows. When they grow up, they feel like rejected, feel ignored, and there's all these troubling feelings. They have to deal with it all their lives. Their marriage, their study, their careers are affected by what they go through in their childhood. Yeah.
I have a quick scenario about the new baby. My friend had like a third or fourth new baby, mm-hmm. and one of the older siblings, yeah, they didn't state that they didn't like the new baby, but they said that, I wish I was the baby, you know, I was uh-huh. as young, because I think maybe they were looking at the love and the gifts and everything. So I think the parents told the older sibling that, you know, when you were that young, you had all the things, and they showed the pictures, and like the baby was having a lot of gifts and appreciation and cuddling and everything. So I think they gave the older child also something, you know, he was looking for. So you think that was enough to handle the scenario, or you think...
When the parents said, "We treated you same way when you were young," the child, if he was smart enough, would say, "Not anymore." Okay. I'm not talking about 4 years ago when I don't remember anything. Okay. I'm dealing with this situation right now. So, but then, you know, children don't always know what to say when. So they may get just more annoyed by this. But yeah, I mean, more attention to the child in some other way. Maybe it doesn't have to be the best way, but some more attention to the child. But then we are learning something more immediate. To be good at this skill means you can immediately handle the situation right there. And but the way you do it is not to be the leader of the discussion. Child should lead the discussion, and you be a listener. That helps the child build his self-esteem, you know. Like when you're talking to anyone, expressing any kind of negative feelings about anything, right? If you facilitate discussion in such a way that you let the other person be an expert of himself, and he or she leads the discussion, you can heal the person oneself. He or she will heal himself. Don't have to do the work for him. But then, yeah, I mean, sometimes. You know, we do something to show our emotion. But right now we are learning to express the emotion itself. Now if we are not good at it, we can do something to express emotion. A lot of husbands, a lot of wives, a lot of people, they don't know how to say, express an emotion, so they express it by actually doing something. Let's go out for a holiday, for a vacation. I think this holiday and vacation and wherever, with all the expense, will prove that, you know, that I care, or I love. You know, so that reminds me of something. This guy, a gentleman, someplace, you know, he said after some discussion, he said, "Mama, having trouble with my family." So I said, "Well, I don't remember what I said, but I said, all right, So it's like, yeah, you know what? I don't think they like me anymore. I'm alone in my house. So he said, I'm trying to go to Los Angeles. No, he's in some other state. I live in Los Angeles for 6 months. I have somebody and found some kind of part-time job there. I'm going to work there. And and send them the money. If it's about the bills, I'll send them the money and they can, you know, take care of themselves. So I try to understand what he's trying to say, you know. Before I say it, can you guess? Like, why would he move away from his house, pay the bills, not live with his family?
Is he the parent?
Huh?
Is he the father?
Yeah. He was pretty serious. I mean, like, I got a sense that he's pretty serious as a plan, you know, in place and wants to actually...
Sorry? He just thinks that he's only playing that role in that house.
Like the provider, just being a provider.
He's like the problem is within himself.
Yes, but what is that problem? Like what is it that he wants to
pay
first?
Attention? Situation.
Uh huh. Of course not. Of course not. It's just sorry.
Or he thinks he is underappreciated.
Unappreciated? Yeah. And why is he moving to Los Angeles?
Running away from the trouble.
Huh?
Running away from the problem.
Okay. If I had not actually heard him say his problem, you know.
No self-esteem.
Huh? He's looking for peace.
In some situations, that might work. That might be the case. But not always. Any other thoughts? Interesting. Thank you.
He's looking for a new wife.
New wife?
Oh, that's a good one.
You too? Possible?
That's even more trouble.
Possible? Yeah. People are people, you know. People are people. Men, women, whatever. Everyone has his own, you know. Okay, then. Well, so he said, I want to move. I said, and why would you want to move away from your family? Can you share with me? So he said, I want to go there, live there 6 months to know, to find out, to test my family and see if they love me or not. If I would be away from them, then I would know, like after 2 months, do they care if I'm not there anymore or I'm paying their bills? So there's like, they say, Awwal ulamu. Now this is the problem now. Now this was the problem we have to deal with next 1 hour. You have to find, first of all, this is the issue, and this is how we want to solve it. Okay, like, can there be other ways of finding out whether they love you or not? Or what other things you can do at home that, for example, you communicate your need for attention and love, for example. Or that, you know, it's two-way, right? So all of those things then we worked on. So it's really interesting how some feeling can generate all these different thoughts and plans, because the feeling was not handled correctly, nobody understood it. So people are thinking irrational ways and figuring out and thinking of things you can't even imagine that you were doing this, you know. You have the hand up too?
I have a quick question, Maulana.
Yes.
Like, sometimes you won't find anyone, Maulana, if, right now we have addressed the children issue, but sometimes for adults, if you don't have anyone to listen to, so what do you suggest to people like who are not listened? So they should just feel like low, having low self-esteem. Maybe they should involve in praying, you know, turning towards God. What should be the course of action?
My teacher. So she is into crisis management and other things. She developed this instrument of figuring out what the client's needs are. What sort of counselor do you need? Not everyone needs the same kind of help. So for me to answer you, like, what would be done depends on what kind of person you are, what kind of need do you have. Like, some people want someone to just listen and they share and they cry and they share and they express anger, frustration, whatever, and they get over it. Or probably that's all they wanted. But there are others who get even more depressed if they're keep sharing their feelings. And I've had a lot of that. The patient with chronic, major depression, if you keep reflecting the feelings, this guy or this lady is going to go get suicidal or something. Or, you know, So you have to use cognitive method to deal with the situation like that, not to take him deeper into those feelings, because it's something probably genetic, something more, you know, dysfunctional going on. So it depends on that. So that's a whole realm in itself, how to deal with it and to develop all these different ways. But I think we do become aware that this is something we have to deal with, and most well-researched method for counseling is cognitive behavior. Cognitive method is generally more well-researched, and it works for people in marital issues and individual issues. And our communities need to become like more open about it, because we just help ourselves, you know. In other societies, even in this society, sometimes you come across people like that, you know. Talk to somebody, you know what? Would you like to talk to somebody? What do you mean? Who do I talk to? Like the therapist or the counselor? What are you saying? Crazy? Nobody calls you crazy. You are okay, you know, fine, no need. Forget about what I said. I mean, you know what? Because they don't think there's anything wrong with them. Like having a little bit of problems, like, makes them having, like, they are a problem. Which is not, you know. So, do we do some more of this, or? I'm so sorry. I give you 5 minutes each, please. You come and talk about, you know, generally parenting related to.
I have a question.
I ask the question, you answer this.
Well, let me ask a question, maybe you all can help us out. There is another scenario that I just need like help with, how to deal with these kind of scenarios, like general help, any tips or techniques and stuff. There are certain issues with kids themselves, because most parents are interested in that. There are certain needs of theirs that have to be addressed, for example, medical help. They need to see a doctor, a dentist, or they have to go to school every day at 7 a.m., for example, right? And this is something that you cannot really compromise on. It's about their health, or it's about their education. They have to get to school on time, for example. If there's a consistent behavior, right, for example, I don't like a doctor because, you know, last time we went, they poked an injection, right? They poked. Or, oh, dentists, oh, they all use these tools. They're scared of, they have this some kind of notion that, you know, this particular thing is bad, and they've got this thing in their head, but sometimes when they get sick, they have to go there. Now they're not really, and then, like some kids have, I don't want to go to school. Every morning, I don't want to go to school, I don't want to go to school, I don't like school. How do you deal with these kind of repetitive, habitual kind of things?
In this course, actually, we are offering again. There is a problem solving, part. Problem solving starts with this basic skill that we did today, listening, empathic listening part. Then you express your situation, your side of the equation. That, you know what, I know that, you know, when you go to a doctor, sometimes they give you a shot, sometimes they give you all these pills to take, sometimes they don't. You don't enjoy that trip to the doctor's office or dentist's office, right? That's A. The B is, I'm worried that your teeth will get bad, you know. I'm worried that, you know, if you don't help yourself, then something might go wrong. You get even more sick, or you miss your school, something like that. That's your side of it. So let's figure out all the different ideas to fix this problem. What do you think? And then you got a paper and a pencil, and you start writing all those ideas without any evaluation. When you are done with all the lists, then you start striking off, this won't work for me, this won't work for you, this won't work, you know. So we work on all of that. Yep.
As brother is talking about this certain problem that the child didn't want to go to school, I had that problem with one of my children when I changed their school. And I worked with him on just, you know, personally for 3 months. And I was not able to solve the problem, but as Maulana said, that sometimes we need someone's help. So I came up to conclusion, I talked to his teacher and I explained him that for last 3 months, you know, I'm just working on this and I'm like quite tired. And she basically tried to help my son in the class, and mostly help him making some new friends, as not only the school environment, teacher, building, friends, everything was changed. And she helped me a lot in settling my son at the new place.
So, Alhamdulillah. Sometimes finding a peer, someone, you know, in your own age, in high school, wherever, that helps. Often, you know, counselors try to do that. Those who are more like involved with the child, they try to find someone who can be a good, you know, example that they can associate with, and they try to, because children do copy other people and get behaviors, people they like. But then, you know, elders have a responsibility to hold the child's hand and, you know, guide him through the process. And so this has been an interesting discussion. There's a lot more to this, and I thought we shouldn't rush this, because this was something really sensitive, and we did look at, you know, one topic at least. Alhamdulillah.
You mentioned that you have things online. Can you
It's an online course. Al-Mahdi Institute, we offer a course in building self-esteem. It's online. It covers this subject and three other subjects.
Yes,
we have a table at the bazaar area.
Okay.
And these are cards you can take in the, you know, you can take a course, a brief four-session course. But we do a lot of this work over there. And it gets, any learning has to be systematic. You know, we can always read books. We can always, you know, go to some expert and have a discussion. But then it doesn't, it's not a substitute for real learning. For real learning, we need to have systematic, you know, goals, and then finish that. But then you really know what it is. And it does impact our lives. I've had so many people, after some sessions, you know, I can see a change. They can see a change. They come back all smiles. They seem too happy. And they, you know, they are more effective with their families, with their workplace and all that. In Islamic duties, people who feel less tense, you know, they're more concentrated in their ibadah. They can read, they want more experience. They want to learn more. They enjoy learning more, because their inside is not troubled anymore. So they're open to the real world, real experiences, learning, enjoying, and doing their best for others. All of that comes. So, yeah.
But do you have something on conflict resolution also?
Problem solving, yes. Conflict resolution would be something, I think, different area.
Yeah, okay.
But maybe in future. We'll see. Thank you all very much. May Allah bless you. I appreciate you all. If you have a word, you can. But I think we ran out of time here. Thank you for attending.
One more thing. You all can fill out the feedback surveys on the table.
Yes, please. The cards are here just in case you know, if you are interested.
What's the name of the session?
Filling 17. Is a whole poster over there with the schedule, which course is starting when. And this course, I can't remember. Starting in a month or something, or maybe after Ramadan. It's over there, the dates are given.
Okay.